This, I push that button, and we're recording. Today is January 4th, 2014. 15. See, you guys are paying attention. That's good. This is the home of Tom Martin and Hazel Clark in Flagstaff, Arizona. And sitting around our kitchen table are five individuals, myself with
Wayne Ranney, Flagstaff, Arizona.
Wayne is the president of the Grand Canyon Historical Society, and
Matthew Schutte, Dillingham, Alaska.
Matthew, how do you spell your name?
S-C-H-U-E-T-T-E.
And?
David Schwantes, Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Dave, how do you spell your name?
S-C-H-W-A-N-T-E-S.
And?
Patrick Gannon, more commonly known as Kuru. And I'm from, all over, but mostly Big Sky, Montana, and up in Alaska.
Cool. And you gentlemen have just come off of a Grand Canyon River trip. Again, it's 2015, January 4th. January 4th. That means you guys just did a winter river trip. Mm-hmm. Kuru, what was it like?
It was beautiful. We were expected to be a lot colder than it was, and so we actually got really fortunate with the weather and ended up, you know, having some great sun days. We didn't get frozen on until the end of the trip, and so even though the days were short and sometimes, you know, it was dark, we didn't really suffer in terms of the coldness for being a winter trip. We really got very fortunate in that. Stayed fairly warm most of the time, which is one of the big concerns on a winter trip, is it can get really, really cold, and you can have a lot of problems with that with your boats and rafting. With three of us, we were very concerned if we had any issues in the cold in the short days of December, that could be a very big problem for us. So that played a big factor in our decision making on the trip, which was a really good experience for all of us because several of us hadn't participated in such a small group expedition before, and so that was brand new for David and myself to manage the group in a different way, often more conservatively than we've run in the past. So it was excellent. We got to use a whole bunch of new lines since there was a higher flow than we'd run before, which was excellent. The water was beautiful, and we could take a lot more cheat lines and sneak lines around some of the bigger waves and kind of manage our risk a lot better, which made for a really exciting trip in that way in terms of being a good boatman and learning to run the river in a whole different way than you usually look at it when you're with a big group of boatmen. You have those safety features of being able to flip a raft easily, and you have people and kayakers that can pick you out, but we didn't have that option. So it brought a whole different intensity to the trip.
So let me get this straight. Just the three of you on this trip, mm-hmm. with three boats?
Three 18-footers.
Three 18-footers. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So I've got a question about the temperatures and then about the rapids. From what you talked about, did it freeze at all on the...
2 days. No, we got a little...
It froze at Lewis Ferry, and then it froze last 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. Okay.
That was it.
Yeah. And so, Patrick, I'll ask you then, and I'll try to steer this, because if y'all chime in, the per person's going to transcribe this someday. I was like, who's talking? Mm-hmm. Who is it? So Patrick, I'm sorry, Matthew, I'll get this right. You haven't rowed before?
Never in my life.
Okay, and did you guys scout the rapids? Did you look at them?
We scouted the Jewels.
Some, yeah.
We scouted House Rock and Killer Fangs, and maybe it.
Was that helpful for you? Did just try to follow these guys?
No, I had a scout. If I didn't scout it, I wouldn't have got it. Seriously.
Okay.
It's nice to know which line I got to hit, and if I miss that line, what's my second option? You know?
Yeah.
So, like, and it helped me out in lava.
Cool.
Because I had to take the second option.
Okay.
So I missed my line on that.
Which was a ledge hole.
Ledge hole.
Okay,
it's still flowing.
Only like 3 foot of my raft actually hit ledge hole.
And then what happened?
I just went over on the left side.
Yeah.
And then I went over a rock that I wasn't trying to go over.
Oh, this is new. The left run.
So I went over a rock. I didn't want to go over, but I ended up going over it. It got me pushed in there. But I seen another line going between two rocks. So I hit that. Of course, I couldn't paddle really anything. But you had to use the rocks to turn my boat.
Okay.
Around this way and that way. So, but it worked. I got it out of there. I didn't even hit Hawaii 5-0.
Sweet.
I just kind of skimmed right past it. You know.
Excellent.
It was good.
So, but still, that means that way up front where the trip started, mm-hmm. you ran Badger without scouting.
Oh yeah.
Nice. And soap and until the jewels, some of the
Yeah, I think House Rock is
the gem. I'm sorry, the Roaring Twenties somewhere?
House, Hants, the Jewels, Lava. House, Hants, Jewels.
Oh, Bedrock.
Bedrock.
Yeah.
Lava.
Cool.
We stopped, we just got an upset too, yeah. Upset.
Right. Yeah, we did do upset, yeah.
But maybe yeah, 10 rapids, something like that.
Yeah. The scouting helps. I mean, being new. But the first rapper I scouted didn't help me at all. That was
House Rock.
So David goes down first and we watch him go down. So I'm like, okay, cool. And they're talking about it for like 4 hours.
Like, we scouted for it was the first major rapid in terms of consequence so now coming at us. And so we talked it out for quite some time. I think it made him a bit nervous.
So we went right, you know, we backwards went right. As soon as I got into it, my oar hit a rock, spun me around.
Which oar?
The core going downstream. Nobody told me I can't dig.
The downstream
one. The down one, yeah, the bad one. Yeah. So I learned my lesson there.
Okay, so now you're in the rapids, you're trying to go to the right, you're down an oar. Did it actually like blow out a lot?
No, it just kind of went like this, but it kind of turned me.
Oh.
You know, so it turned me forward and back into the main rapid, which is House Rock, the big hole. And I hit it.
Well, he almost flipped in the wave above the hole. He didn't even get to the hole. He almost flipped in a way that was right above the hole.
So, of course, me, I just like a deer with the headlights shining. I just stood up and didn't do nothing.
We were sitting at, well, you were, well, I came down right afterwards because I was running safety, and we were like, you didn't do a single thing we told you to do.
I was like, this is going to be a
not
long
one.
Trip.
Not one.
This is going to be a long trip if you do that. If you trap it, it would come along.
But it was a great wake up because, you know, before it had been kind of mellow rapids and we've been getting into it and been having success, and then to hit a larger rapid like that where you had to make a move, it was like, oh, it was a kind of a wake up call. Where you'd be like, I have to put some real hard effort into this. This isn't just a float thing. Like I have to really learn to oar this boat. Yeah. And after that, you snapped into gear and started really, you know, working harder and playing in eddies and.
Yeah.
So Matt, had you ever paddled a canoe?
Yeah, I've been in canoes before.
Kayak?
No kayak. Oh, it's kayak once.
Okay. Well, you got in it once and did a 4-foot log drop into a lake and made it, and then tipped over and got out, and that's about it.
I did the
in a ditch in Texas.
Yeah,
in Texas.
No, I'm just asking because I'm wondering if you have any experience with current and water flow. And
jet boats, yeah. But okay. now we're paddling though.
He's never done whitewater.
Never ever before this. Just our little trip in Alaska, which is, what, class ones, class twos?
I have some class three when it's bigger water.
Yeah. It's about canoeing, but they're like short, half-mile rivers, mile rivers, you know.
So what was your most, this is a question to Matt here, what was your most kind of exciting or moment? Would that have been Lava on the left, or was there another rapid that?
Oh, my favorite rapid was Hermit. Hermit was huge. To me, I hit the line perfect, and other people didn't, you know, but it was still, everybody had a good time on it, but I hit the line that I didn't get splashed. Over all the way is perfect. And I was just so geeked. Like, before I got all the rap, I was standing up like, yeah. It was fun. It was.
Cool.
And the jewels, what we ran with another group just in case something happened. So we were with the other boats just in case. And so we ran them hard all day. And then, you know, we did our own thing after that.
Cool.
But it was easier to run them with a big group there. Because I didn't worry too much. Like, okay, yeah, I watched your boats go down. And now I'm like, hey, if they can do it, I can do this pretty simply, you know. Plus, if I do flip, it's going to be easy to get it taken care of. So, I mean, it was less off my mind. So I didn't want to disappoint these guys and have you guys working all day long trying to flip a wrap, you know. So.
Yeah. Good thinking. What challenged you the most on this journey?
Hiking. Diamond Peak. Yeah, I did Diamond Peak. So that was pretty cool. That was challenging for me. I'm not a hiker. Me and crew made it up. David almost made it up.
I got about 200 feet from the top, and I was like, it's far enough for me.
Because we get down, you know? So, but yeah, that was the most challenging and the most rewarding thing of the whole trip. Then, of course, Havasu, Beaver Falls, getting over there, that was pretty, that water is amazing over there. That whole place is amazing. So that was the second best highlight of my trip. It was definitely the hikes. And then, you know, the rapids, and, too.
And we got to do a lot of them, too, because of this pace, which was great. We got to explore a lot of places and stop in unusual places that you don't go in big groups, because you kind of have these set modes where you're going to hit the big attractions and you got to move at a certain pace. So you maybe get one or two, and then we were able to get a whole bunch of new things in that we hadn't really been able to explore or could explore them further than we'd ever been able to go before, because we had a little more time.
So, Kuru, Matt hadn't done this before, but you had, how many trips had you done before in Grand Canyon?
This is my second trip.
Okay.
And I came in a similar way. My first whitewater trip was in 2010 with David down the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
And that's where we met, and then he introduced me to whitewater, and then we've been running whitewater since.
So what was the coolest hike that you did on this trip?
Oh, man. On this trip? The hike to the unnamed butte outside of Fat City Camp, back up in there, awesome. Phenomenal butte. I really love that. Going way back, you can get way back in the canyon and get up those spines, and you can look back upon the lava fields one way, and then you see looking at Peach Springs the other way, and it's just a beautiful contrast and a different view of the canyon than you usually get. Usually, you're used to a month of monuments and steep walls, and all of a sudden you see this lava flow that's coming down, and you really get a whole different sense of the canyon. So, to me, that one was probably my favorite hike, and new one. No, and one that I probably wouldn't have done if we didn't, you know, have a little chance to do it. And I looked it up in your book. I had your other hiking book, and so
cool.
I've checked out a whole bunch of those.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of study in your book, trying to figure out what other places we could go that we don't normally go with a big group kind of thing.
Fine. Kuru, I'm going to come back to you again and ask you the same sort of series of questions I asked Matt, which was, what was your best rapid work you thought on this trip, and what was the hardest?
I know what the hardest one is.
Tell them about upset.
You wait.
All right, I would say that maybe my two most interesting rapids of this trip, because this was a new experience for me too, because I was running safety and back, and this was my first full order of the trip. Last time I had duckied some of it, so it was a new level for me. And in Upset Rapid, we had scouted Upset, and Upset had a great wave. I love that rapid. And David went down first, and then we were kind of sneak around to the right, and you have to get around the boulder field. But it was running high, so we had a good move in there. And when we launch out, David runs through and makes the right. And then I'm floating up on Matt, and we were on slightly different eddy lines, and Matt slowed, and I was coming into him, and you know, I need to pull out, and we're coming into the rapid, and I was like, oh no, I'm not going to be able to back out enough to have enough momentum to get to the right and to bust through the wave in order to make this move, and if I push in, we're both in trouble, you know, Matt's got it. So I ended up going right to left at Upset, and I got on my oars, and I oared all the way to the other side of the river and hit the left side of the hole at Upset. Standing up, screaming the whole way.
Yelling at him.
Yelling at Matt. No, Matt! Go, Matt! Wait, get out of my way! And I ended up passing him at the hole.
He beat me.
He was sideways at the hole in our video, and as I'm hitting the hole at Upset, topping out over it. So, yeah, it wasn't, I'd say, the cleanest, but it was far and away the most interesting in terms of how we were working.
So then back to Matt, what happened to you in that upset hole?
Oh, I was fine. The thing was, like, I couldn't go any faster because I would miss my line then. You know, I was trying to pull in right past this rock perfect. And I did a really good run on it, actually.
Cool. Yeah, his run was perfectly what we talked about. It was just one of his cleanest runs.
Technically, go in, flip around, come back around, flip around this rock, and then start flowing down. It worked pretty good. Yeah, it was awesome. So
then, question for Dave. So Kuru's running sweep, and Matt's in the middle, and you're leading.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a good boat orientation, because you've got the strongest in the front, but not a weak person in the back either. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kuru's got some skills there. So what was it like for you with these two guys behind you?
Mostly I was just hoping that Matt was going to do what I was doing, for the most part. I was like, each time, I was like, Matt, just do what I do. And he did. I mean, he'd watch how many strokes I took, what angle I was going into it, and different things like that. So I was concerned. I wasn't too concerned about Kuru, because I've seen him do stuff before, and I was like, well, he'll figure it out. He'll make it happen like it's supposed to. But Matt, being his first time and everything, I was like, okay, you know, just hoping that he followed me as close as he could and all that, which it worked out most times, and there's a couple times that he didn't really want to follow me or do what I was doing, kind of. Yeah. So
I learned my lesson with that one.
Oh, let's go back to Cooper for a minute. So that was one rapid. What was another one? You said there were.
Oh, I had a great accomplishment in Lava Falls on this trip. Yep, I never have to go left at Lava again. So I went as far left as humanly possible. I took the 18-foot raft down the kayak sneak line, and it worked. But it was I think I said for the longest lava run. I think it was a 40-minute lava run.
45-minute lava run.
So I had a lot of time to check it out. I know a lot about that rapid now because we were again working conservative lines, and lava's running clean. I'd run right, run in a ducky, like, and I know that line, but we were going to try this left line, which we're really excited about because this is a new test for us. And we've been working on a few things upriver in terms of getting our rafts tucked under these waterfalls and around these rocks and making some sneakier moves, which kept us out of danger, but it was also a little more technical. And David's been rowing on the Rogue, 2 years ago? And learned a lot about, you know, those kind of maneuvers and in the Salmon River, and he'd been teaching me. And so we're gonna go far left, and instead of doing the normal left line at Lava, we decided to go. We could go even further left, and there's a small little waterfall drop into a eddy pool, and then you can push back out into the backside of ledge hole and run through if you can make that move out right. And so David leads, and he hits it. And it hit a little bit different than we had talked about, but it pushed out and made it down just like we talked about. And we're like, all right. And I was concerned because we needed to give a lot of room. I wanted to let everyone through lava one at a time to get in. And I was concerned about being able to see the entrance because it was pouring over and you have to move through a lateral. And so then Matt's goes, and I give Matt lots of room, as I've learned my lesson. And then Matt didn't go anywhere close to that entrance at all. Matt goes 30 feet, like two boat lengths over, and hits the ledge hole. And I'm like, excellent, so I'm going to go way left. I want nothing to do with what just happened. And I'm pulling left, and I want to tuck into this eddy line to set up for this fall drop that I got to do backwards. And I'm going, I'm getting ready, and all of a sudden, I'm not moving. And starboard side stern was just barely stuck on a rock at the top of the eddy. I pulled him just a bit high, and I couldn't spin back into the current. I was stuck. I kept trying to, you know, maneuver myself, but it was just too strong, and I was just too stuck, and I'm too light to bounce my raft myself off where, you know, another 100 pounds, and I could maybe get a little bit more, but those are big tubes. And so I was exasperated. I tried for 20, 30 minutes. I was everything I could, pushing off my oars, and I was 4 feet from shore. It was just like, oh, in my dry suit, red face. And they had pulled down below, and David was hiking up through the sawgrass to come try and help me, and I'm just sitting there being like, man, I'm the safety guy in this, and I'm like sitting right, I'm right next to the ledge hole roaring the whole time, standing on my boat, jumping around, and I'm 12 feet from the waterfall. So finally, like, I get the right combination of, you know, pull on the right oar, and I had my left oar jabbed against a rock and braced, so I could brace enough to get enough of a poof current to push me up off that rock and get enough current under my boat. But at that point, I'd just been really busting for, you know, another 10 minutes, and now I'm moving. And now I'm dropping into lava with, like, exhausted, and I got two strokes to set up for this line. And I dropped it, and I didn't get a good push out of the eddy line, and I ended up going over every pour over on the left side on the way down. I had the left side of that raft tipped up vertical and pirouetted it out of the pour over pool. And came out far left of 5-0 and just fine and exhausted.
Then at a slot at the bottom where he went through that slot tunnel like this wide.
Yeah.
And then he took his 18-foot raft through that slot.
I learned. I don't like that line. It didn't feel good in my heart. And I didn't hit it. And so I learned a lot from that one. It was just because it was a little bit out of my comfort zone. And I had been... I didn't commit to it fully in the right way, so it was good. It was a real lesson for me for the rest of the canyon.
What would you do differently next time?
Oh, I'll go right.
This is Wayne. I was just wondering why you guys didn't go right to begin with. Was it just...
Well, it's partially because of what you told us
before. Oh, we want to try it.
I've never gone left. And I've always gone right and everything. So we're taking a bunch of sneak runs down a canyon and all that. And so we come up onto lava. And right was huge and everything. And I was like, I kind of like the right run and everything, but I've never gone left. And he had mentioned going left before, you know, before we did the trip and everything. So I was like, well, let's give this left a try. I think I see a pretty nice run on through there kind of thing. And it worked out pretty good for me. Huh? But and even mine was only the very top of it. There's a couple things that happened that I wasn't quite expecting and everything. But because I dropped backwards over that drop in between the rocks, which was only like 10 feet wide, just barely enough for us to slide through into an eddy. And I was gonna come back. And then I figured I was going to bounce off a rock on the shore and then spin my front end around. And it didn't quite work out that way, but I got myself spun around in the eddy that was there above the ledge hole, above and to the left of the ledge hole. And then I pushed over from that. I was right on the shore, and I pushed over to the ledge hole because it's got that big rock on the left side of the ledge hole. I was pushing over towards that, but before I got into that, I slid on down and through. So it worked out just fine in that respect and everything. It didn't go exactly like I figured, but it was pretty close to like I figured. Run.
Cool. So Dave, what were some of your runs that you were real happy with?
I would have to say I like Sock Dolager the best this time. Sock had the biggest wave in the canyon on this trip. Yeah. And Sock, I've never, on all my other trips that I've done before and everything, Sock never really impressed me all that much and everything, but this time Sock had the biggest wave in there.
At the top or the bottom or the
right
middle?
Right in the middle.
Just the bottom, the colors like that?
I'd say the wave is 15, 20 foot high. In the middle of Sock. I mean, I'd never seen the middle of Sock look like that before. I mean, it was easy enough to just straight, you know, go right through it and everything. I actually hit the wave sideways, you know, but I high-sided real good and everything. But Sock Dolager was huge. Lava, it was just, lava was kind of a pain in the butt in a way kind of thing. I'm definitely going right next time kind of thing. Just right big and huge and fun and everything. Crystal, I tried going right at Crystal, and that didn't work out for me, so then I went straight into the hole at Crystal sideways, and went up, completely got my raft up sideways like this, but I was all the way up and around the tube, sitting on the tube high side and everything, and there was a whole group of people at Crystal, and as soon as they saw me going to the hole sideways, I went down and went up, and my raft is sitting like this, and I'm up on the tube sitting up, and I'm like way, way up in the air, in the middle of Crystal, right in the middle top of that hole, on the back side of it and everything, and the whole group that was over there, everybody just started cheering, all just yelling and cheering, and it was a good time. So Crystal was interesting. I didn't quite do what I figured on. Lava.
Bedrock went okay for everybody?
Bedrock was just fine.
Yeah, bedrock was really clean.
Yeah, bedrock was, there was enough water to where we could stay way over to the right and not have to get right in front of the rock kind of thing. Bedrock was actually really easy.
At Crystal, did you go right or left of the rock garden at the bottom?
I went left of the rock garden. I think
we started right. But Dave and Mrs. Line right, so we had to go, this is Matt.
Well, I mean, I could have gone right too, but I always go left at the Rock Garden for some reason. Always go left.
Okay.
Right. There's a few good waves in there, and so I'm interested in going there on the other side.
Bottom.
So yeah, definitely left at the Rock Garden. Most everybody else went right.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I went right.
And then question for you, Dave, on hiking. What was the funnest hike you did?
The best hike, I would say, probably Diamond Peak. Even though I didn't get to the top, I'd say Diamond Peak was the main hike. Okay. And it's I just got up to a certain point, and I had no problem going up. I could easily go up. It's just I didn't like the idea of coming back down that stuff. So that's what turned me around, was I didn't like the idea of coming back down Diamond. So once I got to a certain point, I was like, okay, you guys go ahead. I'm going to work my way back down to the saddle, and I'll wait for you down there.
What was it about the hike that jazzed you?
Just getting up there kind of thing. And I got a feeling I'll do Diamond again someday. I mean, I'll go up to the top, you know, kind of thing, because it wasn't... When I did come back down and everything, it wasn't quite as bad as I was anticipating kind of thing. But I was already coming back down, and I wasn't going back up that kind of thing. So, just getting up there, and I'd never done that hike before, so it was interesting in that respect.
Okay. And I'm gonna start with Matt then. Matt, what would you do differently next time?
I don't know. Probably get up a little earlier in the morning. I don't know.
What time did you get up?
Well, we got up sunrise.
Yeah.
But, I mean, with three people, it took us a while to get rigged up and ready to go every day. So short days, you didn't get as many miles as you wanted to get in. So, differently, what's the waterfall I missed?
Hell's Chasm.
Hell's Chasm.
Yep.
I've seen pictures of it. I want to see it really bad. I didn't eddy out on that one, so I missed it. And I didn't realize it was that waterfall, so I kept on going down and eddied out like 40 without waiting for these guys to come back. Then, like, 5 days later, I'm like, when we come up that waterfall, they're like, you missed it.
That was the one he said, it's the only reason you wanted to come down here is to go to that waterfall, which I want you missed.
All right, next time, Hell's Chasm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So keep you coming back, right?
What will you do next time? What did you take away from this trip that you're like, right, next time I want to?
Probably not going to raft the Inner Gorge after dark again.
Run that. Who knew?
Again, yeah.
Yeah, we did the hike up to Clear Creek, up to the waterfalls, and got in the waterfall and had a good time and everything. We got back, it was dark by the time we got back to the boats, and then we had to meet friends of ours at Cremation that night. So we went from Clear Creek down to Cremation completely. It was pitch dark. Couldn't see anything because the walls were black and there was no moon out or anything like that. Jeez. We were listening to where the holes were, you know, just by listening, we're like moving around to where different things are and all that.
So you ran Zoroaster and you ran 86 mile, whatever it is. That,
yeah. Yeah.
Did you have flashlights?
No.
No.
Well, we had headlights. They don't do any good.
They just helped us not see each other.
Hey, again, we just put them on red, like boating in Alaska. Just know each other are.
The headlamps actually messed you up more because they made your eyes, because you could see your raft really good, but you couldn't see anything outside your raft really good. So we ended up turning off our headlamps and just going like
going for it.
Wow.
How did you find Cremation?
I've been there before, so I knew where it was at and everything.
Okay.
Yeah. And it opens up, and there's that big eddy there and everything, so it was finding Cremation wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
We got to Cremation, I think, about 10 o'clock at night, something like that.
And what did your group say? Were they there?
Two friends of ours hiked in, they came in, they hiked in that night, so they didn't get down there till about 10:30 at night, and then we'd just come through and that, we're all real tired and everything, so we went to sleep, and I guess they started yelling at us from the other side, but we were sleeping already. So we met up with them in the morning, and then they rode down to Granite with us, and then they hiked out Granite.
Cool. Did you do any other nighttime driving?
Yeah.
But each and every time we swore that we would never do it again.
Yeah, we're not doing this again.
What was the last one we did that me and him missed the eddy?
Oh, at Travertine Canyon. They missed the eddy at Travertine Canyon.
Which is not, don't beat yourself up over that one. It's an easy one to miss.
Yeah. Well, so anyways, we ended up camping at those rocks.
We were camping in a surgeon eddy about an eighth of a mile down past Travertine Canyon. We got up in the morning, walked back up, got in the waterfall and everything. We're close enough that we could get back up to it. But we slept on the boats, and the boats are doing like this all night and everything.
Fell in twice that night. Getting up from my boat. I mean, I fell in from the shore because the rocks were so slippery.
Mm-hmm.
So I got on the rocks and I slipped down. And it's really deep there, you know. It's up this deep. So, and I almost lost my boat. I jumped off again because I went down because crew totally missed the eddy. I got worried about him. I'm going to go down and make sure he's okay. I don't know how far down he is. He's just right around the rock. I didn't know that. So I get down there and I do the same thing. I get out and I go slip in the rock again. And I don't have my rope in my hand. So I'm hanging out to the strap right here. And the boat is going downstream. So I have to do one of those quick grab my ropes, jump on the rock, sit on my rope, and, you know, just sit there exhausted, wait. Like, oh. Okay, now I gotta find a place to tie up.
In the dark.
Slip your rocks.
You didn't have his headlamp out either.
Yeah, I didn't have my headlamp out yet.
And I had my, as we're coming into it, it was dark and I knew these guys might, because I knew that edgy's a hard one to get. So I put my headlight on and I put it on backwards and I put the strobe on my headlight. So I was figuring that these guys could see me, see my strobe, and follow my strobe into the eddy there.
And we did. We just totally missed. I just totally missed it. I got typewriter across the rapid because I came into it wrong. And
yep.
Was on the wrong side of it and couldn't make it. There were some expletives yelled that evening. Damn.
So what other misadventures happened on this trip? This is quite the journey.
Can you tell them about Hagstu? The nighttime walk.
Yeah, we went up there too. We went up to Beaver Falls and hung around. Went up there, walked through the falls and back up and around. And I kind of had a feeling that when we got up there and we're sitting at the picnic table, we're like, well, we should get going because I think we might have some issues with darkness coming on. And it got dark halfway back to the river from Beaver Falls. Completely dark. No moon out, no nothing like that. And so we were, he took off in front of us. He was walking faster. And then we, Matt and I got to a point that we had no light, he couldn't see anything at all.
No flashlights?
Oh. We didn't have any lights with us.
Yeah.
And we're still on the upstream side of the cave that you got to walk through to get on through. So we're like, how are you going to find the cave? Somehow we found a cave in the dark, completely dark and everything. We found a cave somehow and everything. And then once, kind of see a little bit of something through the cave and all that. My camera battery is out, but I turned on my camera and used the light from the screen to see us through the cave. And then as soon as we got out the other side of the cave, the camera went out again. And we were walking from the cave going on down completely in the dark. He ran into a cactus a couple times. Well, he ran into a cactus, and then as he turned to get away from the cactus, he kicked the cactus again because the cactus was over in a spot that he couldn't see where it was at.
We finally found a big stick and kind of felt our way. It works, you know what I mean? Yeah. Plus, this is for creek. Like, there's a canyon here. The creek's over here. It has to be this way. You know, you can't mess that up.
But it's not much of a trail.
There's no trail at all. But, you know, still, I mean... He came and rescued us, though.
Yeah, he jumped in the water.
So I ran ahead because I'm a faster hiker, and I was like, well, we need a light. You know, that was silly for us not to bring a light. We need to deal with this, and we're not going to make it out of here in the pitch dark. There's a lot of danger in that. So I was like, all right, this is my shot. I got a little bit of moonlight left. If I scramble ahead quickly, I can go get a light and come back. And so I worked my way out to kind of where the narrows start, and... I know about the cliff trail on the other side, but I didn't know it was too dark at that point. The walls get so high that there was no light at that point. And so I couldn't remember the right spot to cross the river. And that trail is really sketchy as it is. And so I took my clothes, threw it back in my dry bag, and jumped into the narrows in the pitch dark and just felt for the current. Because I couldn't see anything. There was total vertigo. It was like cave darkness. And you're going through there because there was no stars. And then you couldn't tell where the walls were or if I was swirling in the sort, and the tide had come up, so the water level had changed. So I couldn't touch anywhere. And so I was just floating and swimming and reaching for current to kind of feel my way through it. And I feel where I'm starting to get shot out, where it really pinches and it starts to get into the mouth. And I'm getting rushed out, and I'm like, it's still really dark. I can't see I know the boats are here, but I'm also in this current that's pulling me out into the rapid. That made me a little bit worried. And so I swam as far as I could to the sides and fell for a raft. And I found my raft and pitch dark and reach up, grabbing my ammo can, grab my emergency headlamp right out of it, and swam over to the cliff trail, hiked back the cliff trail, hiked back up and found these guys. And then we walked back to our boats. That was a harrowing 15 minutes of swimming.
I was a bit frustrated. I wanted to stop where we're at and sleep for the night. It was pretty warm out. I was like, it's safe if we just stop and sleep here than anything else. I mean, it's safety, you know what I mean? So I was a little frustrated, but whatever. We made it through, though, so.
Well, in the end, it was good, too, because it ended up raining that night. So
I did, yeah.
We pulled up safely and said, we've had enough. We'll leave at dawn. This is a safe move. We're not in craft. Not after that. And we've been having on and off rain showers in the nighttime during that section of canyon. And so we've been wet for a couple of days. Some of our gear had gotten wet, and so we were kind of grumpy. And in the middle of the night, it rained. And we're on our boats. And so we were setting up whatever we could to just stay dry and stay out of it for a little bit.
Yeah.
And so we'd stayed out. It would have been a bad deal. We would have been cold and wet. So we were fortunate in that aspect. That way, it wasn't all, it might have not, one decision paid off in another way. Maybe it's safer to pull up in those moments, but in the end, getting back to our safe zone and getting dry and warm worked out. And so it was.
Any other adventures like that?
Well,
I'm sure there is. I'm trying to think of some more.
Get anything up.
Yeah.
Did you see any other people on the water?
Yeah, the first 2 weeks of the trip, we actually saw probably as many or more people than I've ever seen on the river. There was a group of guides out of Flagstaff here that we met up with, and those were the ones we ended up doing the jewels with, ran through the jewels with those guys.
And they were full group, yeah.
Yeah, full group, and then there was another group from Tahoe that we met up with, and we actually, we all camped up together a couple of nights and had a good time and all that sort of thing, meeting people and all that. And then for the first 2 weeks of the trip, we saw all kinds of people. Then after that, we didn't see anybody for probably 10 days, something. Nobody at all for like 10 days. And then there was a group of three guys that passed us. And then another group of five people that passed us, and that was about up. That's all we saw for the last 3 weeks of the trip. Was just almost nobody from, what was it, where did we leave everybody?
It was Upset.
No, it wasn't Upset. It was Granite, was it? Well, Granite, we ran.
No, Blacktail, pretty much.
Blacktail, yeah. From Blacktail down, we're pretty much on our own. Blacktail.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it was used. It was, then in the second half, we didn't see anybody.
We did a double layover at Blacktail. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was nice, because we, at Lower Blacktail, Lower Blacktail is really nice with the water, the recent flood and everything. Lower Blacktail was awesome.
Nice.
And we told the other groups and everything. We got into Blacktail Canyon. We went and set up the disco ball and there's laser lights and the show and all that sort of thing inside the canyon. And so, well, yeah, we'll get it all set up. You guys just come on down. You take the upper camp. We'll take the lower camp. So we had a good time in there.
Cool. And did I ask you, Dave, what would you do again? Did I ask you that? What will you do next trip?
Not run the inner gorge after dark. I'm not going to do that. I don't know. I'll probably do a lot of the same things we just did. Maybe go on some more hikes, go on other hikes that I haven't gone on again. I don't like running the sneak lines at all. We ran sneak lines on almost everything, and I don't necessarily care for doing that. But if we had say 10 or more people in a group, we'd run all the big lines because it's easy to flip back up and everything. So just with three people in a group, we did the water real conservative, like, kind of thing, just to make sure that we didn't have a problem or get a flip and then have to deal with us getting a full raft over and all that.
So question for you on that, just for clarification, you ran conservatively. It sounds like those runs worked except for sitting on a rock for crew there, lava a little bit. But you wouldn't do that because it's not fun, or
Well, to me, like running the right side at Upset or running the right side at Crystal or something like that, it's a lot of work and it's not much fun. So you can run the left side and you take two strokes on the left and it's all kinds of fun. There's not really much work involved in it, kind of thing. So it's just a matter of, do you want to work hard and not have any fun, or do you want to not work really at all and have all kinds of fun? So that's why.
Cool. Did that help you, though, work on your boating skills?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's just because we were running a lot of tight chutes and everything, just real, real narrow chutes that I'd never actually even seen anybody run a lot of the stuff that we ran before. Like Hans, when we got to Hans, is big and burly and everything. But Hans, the way we ran Hans, it was straight up simple, straight simple. We ran way, way left on Hans, like way, way left at Hans. And then dropped in...
Right at the rock.
Yeah, there's a rock on the left-hand side, a big rock on the left-hand side, and there's a little bit of water going left side of that rock, but then there's, you know, all the other water, and then you got the rock island in the middle kind of thing. We went right next to the rock that was on the left-hand side, and then, but there's a pour over, and we got close to the pour over and then slid in behind that rock, and then used the eddy that was behind that rock to keep us on the left side, and Hans was nothing.
That worked great.
It was nothing. It worked out perfect in that respect.
We all ran that one really clean, too.
And that's kind of part of the reason, too, why I think we ran some of the other sneak lines, because Hans worked out so good for us and everything. Like, we'll kind of keep on going along with that style through the trip.
Cool. Dave, how many times have you run through Grand Canyon?
This was the 10th time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I mean, is there anything else about this trip that you want to bring forward? Because I do want to talk a little bit about some of the stuff Dave and I talked about some of your Grand Canyon history past and some of those adventures. So before we head out in that direction, I think I'm going to start with Matt, maybe. Did you find anything on this trip that really inspired you?
Yeah, Diamond, getting up there, really inspired me. I was like, okay, I know I can do that now. I mean, I was geeked. I was happy as hell when I went up there. And just being able to do this trip without flipping. You know, I thought it was pretty good. You know, I'm happy with it. We're all safe. And that's my big... And I was worried about being safe with three people, you know. So, but just getting down here safely is inspiration enough, you know. And the beauty of Grand Canyon, obviously. I don't want to leave. I stayed there for a long time if I could. So, that's about it. But Diamond was it. Diamond really just, that view there, spectacular. So. Cool.
And crew, you?
In terms of highlight?
Yeah, just what inspired you about this trip?
being able to live in that environment. I spent a lot of my life really trying to get into beautiful environments in this world and do a lot of traveling to do so. In Alaska and tracing the Rockies. For this trip, I drove from Alaska all the way down. So I traced the entire mountain range till it sunk into the earth and went to the bottom of it. So it's been an amazing journey to watch the land shape like that and then to be able to just be around in an earth that's that incredible and to truly get a sense of it. One of our greatest friends has a great quote who says, "Only those who have spent significant time in the desert truly understand our insignificance in time." And that sense of wonder and awe that can often leak out when you're in the front country and, you know, you get so busy with your daily life, and for the whole world to just stop and make you look at it and contemplate that space and to be there and how you interact with it. You feel so fortunate and so grateful to be present in those spaces and to spend that time in a very different place in a very different world. So that really, it inspired me the first time and even further this time to keep coming back and to keep being in that environment and exploring it a lot more. It's in a really an incredible place and treasure in the world. Yeah, that was
cool. Dave, you?
I would say for me, it'd be teaching somebody that didn't know anything at all about whitewater how to get down the canyon and do it successfully. I think that was probably the main thing for me overall.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Dave, can you tell me some of your other canyon adventures?
Well, I started in 2001, was my first time down, and that was, I'd done some whitewater before that, but not really, just canoeing whitewater in Wisconsin when I was growing up, class 2, maybe a little bit of class 3, something like that. And in 2001, I got invited on a Grand Canyon trip and got down to the landing there, and the trip leader asked me how I wanted to do it and everything, if I wanted to row a boat or how I wanted to do it and all. And there was a ducky there, which I'd never even seen a ducky before, didn't know anything about it and everything. I said, "I'll take that thing down." So I duckied the entire canyon the first time. And I swam probably 100, 150 times, something like that. But it got like 2 weeks into the trip. It was another December trip, just like this, 30-day December trip. And 2 weeks into the trip, I got to a point where I was aiming for the holes just because I was ignorant of what the whitewater can necessarily do and everything. So I'm aiming for the holes. I ran into the hole at Crystal, ran into the hole, got out, went up and did it again, got out and went up. And then the third time I did it, one of the girls on the trip, she wanted to ride with me into the hole. And everybody on the trip was like, "No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to go where he's going." She's like, "Yeah, I do." I was like, "Okay, get in, let's go." and just the 209 hole, like pretty much all the big holes, run straight into the hole, just see what it would do and everything. And it worked out pretty good. And then it was 2004 before I went again. I took my dad in that one and had a good time taking my dad on down. My dad got in the ducky a few times, did some things on his own. Me and him ran lava in the ducky. Didn't make it, but we tried. Anyway. And then I got out and ran lava 3 more times.
Right side or left side?
Right side. Yep, right side. And got out and did it a few more times. Eddied out and did it a few more times. That first time I went down the Grand, I did lava 5 times in the ducky. Get out, eddy out to the bottom, walk it back up, and do it again. Made it once. Tried 5 times, made it 1 time. so yeah, 2004, 2007, had some issues I had to put in. Ended up getting put in jail for a few hours and losing my permit. And
tell us that story.
Well, I had an old girlfriend that had sent some anonymous emails to the Park Service saying that we had all kinds of meth and heroin that we were bringing, massive quantities of meth and heroin that we were bringing down to sell to everybody in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. And as soon as the 4 different law enforcement agencies came up on us all at the same time, the ranger, Dave Chapman, the ranger, I knew something was different because when he asked for the IDs, he didn't give the IDs back. You know, instead of just looking at it and giving it back to you, he kept all the IDs. So I was like, "What's going on here?" Because he doesn't normally do that. So then as soon as he got all the IDs and everything, that's when the rangers walked on up. So there's David Chuanis here. It's my permit and everything. It's David Chuanis here. And yeah, that's me. And it's like, "We understand you have massive amounts of meth and heroin that you're going to sell to everybody." And I looked at the rangers like, "You guys know there's nobody in the canyon, you know, and anybody that's in the canyon doesn't have any money with them." So I was like, "That's just foolishness." And they're like, "Well, do you have anything that you'd like to tell us about?" And I had a bag of marijuana, so I was like, "Okay." I was hoping that they would take mine and just leave everybody else alone and give me a citation and be done with it. So I told him I had that, walked him over to my camp, got it out of my bag, gave it to him, and they turned me around, put me in handcuffs, and stuffed me in a paddy wagon immediately. And then a few minutes later, both my brothers were in the paddy wagon with me. And then about a half an hour after that, there was two more guys on the trip that were in the paddy wagon also. All five of us, just for possession of marijuana. That was it. Nothing else. And so then they take us up to Page. We went to Page, got put in the jail in Page. And then like 3 hours later, there was the judge came in to the jail. And the judge, well, when I was sitting in the jail, I got a phone call from Dave Chapman. So the guard came in, had me go into this other room. Dave Chapman got me, has me on the phone. He's like, I've revoked your permit, which was the worst thing. I mean, I was like, give me a fine, whatever kind of thing. I'll deal with it. It's wrong. I'll deal with it kind of thing. But you took my permit away. So we had, and I had 14 people there that were all set to go for 30 days down to Grand Canyon. And so when he took the permit away, went back in there and told everybody about that, and we're all trying to, you know, we're like, well, that's the hugest hit right there.
On what grounds, Dave, did he tell you he'd revoked your permit?
Possession of marijuana.
Thank you.
And I think at that time, because when the judge came in, like 3 hours later, the judge came in, and the very first thing she said to me when they pulled me out and I had to go in and talk to her, the very first thing she said to me is, I have no idea why you're here. She's like, they should not have put you in jail for possession of marijuana. She's like, I have no idea why you're here. And we went through some things, and then they let me out, and then they ended up letting everybody else out. We stayed in Page that night, and then the next day, my parents came up and picked us up. But they were, we stayed in Flagstaff for 5 days, I believe it was, trying to figure out what we're going to do, because we're thinking about going around to San Juan, or, you know, we had all these people here, we had everything packed, ready to go, and actually when we got hauled off, we had everything blown up, everything packed up on the river, so then they had to de-rig all that stuff, and then 5 days later, we were able to, a friend of mine that was on the trip, talked to his mom, she knows some people, she knew Harry Reid in Nevada, apparently, and somebody made some phone calls or whatever, and then the other nine people that weren't arrested were allowed back on the river. So they got back on the river, and it was 5-6 days later, something like that, and they had a 19-day trip at that point. And of that 19 days, my brothers and I, we hiked from the rim to the river, back to the rim, 6 times, I believe it was, and camped out with them 9 nights of the 19 nights that they were on the river. And we tried to set it up to where they did layovers when we got down to camp out with them. We tried to set it up to where there was a layover, because we did Silk Creek, and then we did Tanner down to Unkar. They camped at Unkar, and that was, we hiked down Tanner one afternoon. We hiked out the next morning, and that was all the way, not just down to Tanner, but down to Unkar also. So, and that was, I have no desire ever to hike the Tanner Trail again. Ever. And if there would have been a layover day, a day in between kind of thing, it would have been a whole different story. But hiking down one morning and hiking out the next, I mean, hiking down one afternoon and hiking out the next morning, that was more than I care to do kind of thing. And when we went to get the permits at the backcountry permit office, I had did my itinerary. I said, we're hiking, well, we didn't have to get a permit for soap, but so we're hiking down Tanner, and then we're hiking down Bass, and I forget just what it was, all I put on the permit, but they looked at the permit and they looked back at me and like, nobody does this. It's like, you guys realize that your Tanner hike is a three-day hike in and a three-day hike out. You guys are going in one day and coming out the next day. I'm like, yep, that's what we're doing. And so then they had to go get the supervisor of the backcountry office. And the two rangers that were there didn't know who we were. And the supervisor came in, he knew immediately right away who we were, because of, you know, most everybody in the park knew who we were then. And so he looks at it and he's like, you guys can do this? I'm like, well, that's what we got to do. My mom and dad are down there, and we're going to go camp out with them. That's what we're doing. And he's like, okay, I can't say no, but I'm saying that what your itinerary is next to impossible, is what he said. And so we went, he gave us the permit and everything. And each time we went down to Soap, we could see that in the morning, we could see people with binoculars up top, because you could see the lights or the shine off the glass with binoculars. So we knew that they were watching us up top there, thinking that we're going to jump on the river then. We didn't. And then when we went down Tanner, there was an older ranger had gone down Tanner before us that morning. He started a few hours before us, and we passed him up probably a third of the way down. And then the next day we passed him up, we're coming back up, and he was halfway down the next day. Halfway, maybe two-thirds of the way down the next day as we're going back up. And right away, as soon as we come up and pass him, he's like, you guys Schwannis brothers? And we're like, yep. And he knew that we were and everything. So he asked us questions and stuff like that. And then we just went out by him and everything. And saw him on the way back up. And as soon as we passed him on the way back up, he turned around and started walking back up, kind of thing. And so then the next time we saw, we went down Bass and hiked down the Bass Trail, which the Bass Trail is awesome. That's probably my favorite hike of all the hikes we did then. The Bass Trail is just beautiful, kind of thing. And it's not near as hard a hike as Tanner, not even close. Just a beautiful hike. Went down Bass and met up with our group, and they came across, picked us up, went over, and we did a layover at Bass. But we could see that when we were doing the layover at Bass, we were looking up in the rocks, about like 500 feet up in the rocks above us, there was two people camped out up there. We didn't see them during the day, but at night we could see their headlights. And we're like, why is, we knew it had to be rangers. Because nobody, you can't hike down from the north rim in the wintertime anyway, so we knew they didn't come from the north rim, and I think so they had to come from the south rim. And they got there before we did, and they were, I think they were trying to be sneaky, but with headlights at night, it's like, well, people right there, kind of thing. And it's like, we know it's got to be rangers, because nobody's going to camp up there when you can camp down here by the river. It just doesn't make any sense at all. So they were up there, watched us a couple days that we were there. And then, what else? We went down, we hiked into lava, hiked down Prospect Canyon, went down the canyon, drove out to the edge and went down the canyon, Prospect. And Prospect was, that's probably another hike I'm not ever going to do again. It's super sketchy going down into Prospect. Coming out wasn't that bad, but it's like I said, I don't have a problem going up stuff, it's just going down stuff I don't like. Okay.
And just for clarification, you came down Prospect Canyon, that's on like River Left, on the south side through the Wallapai Reservation?
Yes.
How did you figure out where to go?
I had been out there before because I had done some exploring in my truck out there, driving out past, you get up to, was it Fraser Wells? And Fraser Wells, you drive out, you pass by a couple of houses, and then you get like another 30, 40 miles out to the edge. And I'd been out there a few years before. I'd driven out there before, so I knew just how to get to where it was. And as far as doing Prospect Canyon, part of it was reading your book, but a lot of it was Harvey's book, because he had the route in, he had written a route in there. We actually didn't find necessarily his route, but we knew it could be done because he said he'd done it, kind of thing. So I was like, well, okay, it can be done. Kind of thing. It's not like you can't do it, but it can be done. But going down, there was a couple times, like we dropped over the edge into the rim, or under the rim, and every step you're taking, you'd be kicking rocks, and the rocks would, you stop, and the rocks would keep on, you could hear them going for like another 45 seconds to a minute later, they're still rolling down Prospect Wash. So we got down that, but when we come out, it wasn't a problem coming out at all. And we got back in the truck, and then we drove out, and we came in at Havasu, went down to Supai. Actually got horses there because we'd done enough hiking, and like we got there and we saw those horses there, and we didn't know anything about the horses necessarily until we got to the hilltop parking lot. We're looking at all the horses and we're like, I bet you we could get one of those, get some of those and ride them on down. I went over, talked to this guy, Claudius Petula or something, I think was his name, one of the Indians that lived down there, and he's like, yeah, I got horses for you. So he's like, $135, you gotta take the horse on, go on down. And we're going to be down there, I think, 2 days, something like that. We stayed at the motel in Supai, which I wouldn't recommend at all. That motel sucks. Supai sucks. The village of Supai is just, it's terrible that they have that much garbage and crap and everything all over that village there. It's such a pretty spot. It's ridiculous. I don't even like Supai. So it's like, you almost, as far as I'm concerned, you get down there, close your eyes till you get out the other side of Supai, and then open them back up, and everything's nice. But we went on down, went down through the falls, and went down to Beaver Falls. Didn't end up meeting up with our group. We're hoping that we're going to meet up with them there, but they didn't come up that far. So we did that one.
So just for clarification, so you missed them there at that pass point?
Yeah, we didn't see them there. But it was, we weren't quite sure, and that is a huge hike for them to come up from the river up to Beaver and everything. So we missed them there. See where else we hike in. It was Soap, Tanner, Bass, Lava, Havasu. There's one more.
Diamond Creek.
Well, we came. They didn't. That was back when you had two permits. You had a permit for the Grand, and you had a permit for Diamond Down. So they didn't take my Diamond Down permit. So we jumped. Back on the river there. We jumped on the river. Diamond went down. There's a bunch of people got off, and then myself, my brothers, my mom and dad, and my ex, we went on down from there.
So, did you go around to the north side, maybe hike down Whitmore Wash?
No, we didn't go on the north side at all.
Okay.
I'll come up with it here shortly. I'm trying to figure out what that other hike we did was.
Hermit or Boucher?
No, it wasn't those.
Was it Phantom Ranch, Bright Angel, Kaibab?
No, I don't put on those. I forget what it was. I'll come up with it here shortly. But there's one more hike that we did down.
I think that qualifies as an epic Grand Canyon story.
I think all these trips qualify as epic Grand Canyon stories.
Yeah, but this one is... This is one you don't hear every day.
Yeah, so it was 9 nights of the 19 nights. We camped out with my friends and family down at the bottom. Got back on the river at Diamond. Went down there, took out South Cove.
Yeah, Dave, I want to touch upon something that Wayne's talking about. I mean, this is perseverance and dedication above and beyond. What is it about the river, your family, Grand Canyon, that for some marijuana they revoked your permit?
Mm-hmm.
Most people, I would assume, would say, well, I'm going to go home. And trip goes on, and I'll catch you up at the bottom, or I'll see you when you get back at the ranch. What's about, why was there the drive to interface with the trip and basically
be part of it? Mostly it was my mom. She didn't want to go at all without me, and I told her she already took time off work, we already spent this money on it and everything, just go on a trip and we'll figure out a way to get down there and camp out with you. We can't go down the river with you, but we'll figure out a way to get down there. And my dad, he was up for going even without us, kind of thing. But my mom was the main thing, that she didn't want to go at all because of all that happened and seeing her sons get all thrown in the paddy wagon and everything. She was done with it. I talked her into going with her, knowing that we're going to try to get down there as much as we possibly could. So that was the main thing, that we did all that hiking. And I don't know that I'd ever done that much. I may never have done that much hiking in the canyon unless we were forced to do so under the circumstances. So that worked out pretty good, and there's great hikes. And like I said, the Bass Trail was awesome. Tanner, I could do without. Prospect Canyon, I could probably do. I don't know. I could maybe do that again, but I don't know. I come in from the north side. I've hiked down the north side 3 times and everything, and that's sketchy too. But it's not near as sketchy as coming down Prospect.
So it sounds like you're quite a hiker. I mean, you've got some fairly obscure routes. In your repertoire of hiking in the canyon now, is there a difference between the hiking and the river running? How does that?
I would say that I'm not necessarily a hiker in general. We hiked because we had to. Then I do like doing the hikes from the river up and back, kind of thing. I could see myself doing more hikes in the canyon from the top sometime, but it's not a big priority of mine. I mean, I really like running the river. Probably partially because I don't have to carry all my stuff. I can put it in my raft and I don't have to carry it with me. And in the hikes that we did do, we were running light. We had our sleeping gear and all our food and everything was down at the bottom. So we didn't have to take a lot of stuff that most people would have to take. We hiked real light. We had the basic necessities. If we had to get stuck overnight and sleep on a trailer or something like that, we had the bare minimum that we could get by with. So it helped a lot with the hike, not having to carry a huge heavy pack.
Yeah.
Carried a light pack in general.
Yeah. What other river adventures have you had that way?
Other rivers?
In Grand Canyon.
Oh, in Grand Canyon? I don't know. I have to think about that one. We did that in 2007 and then ran it in... I had a permit in 2007, and somehow with the lottery system and everything, I got another permit for 2008. So I had a permit 2 years in a row somehow. And I'm wondering possibly if there's a little bit of respect given to us because of all the hiking that we did, because the Park Service, they're watching us every move we made and everything. Maybe I just got lucky with the lottery. But I'm wondering if there was a little bit of extra something there that helped get me a permit that very next year, kind of thing, because maybe they thought that they pushed it. Went a little too hard on us the first year, so maybe they helped me out getting a permit in 2008. I don't know. But I got a permit in 2008, and that one went great. Every year since we had the problem in 2007, I've been on a canyon every year. So it almost seems like it may have helped me do the canyon every year somehow, some way. I don't know. But it kind of seemed like it worked out that way. 2010, we did, he was on the trip, we did, we had 16 people, and pretty much everybody was a rock star on the trip. I mean, it was a wild, crazy trip, and we ran all the hard, super hard lines, running, shooting for the holes, everything. We only had one flip in the trip, and we were aiming for the holes with their rafts, with the duckies and everything. Yeah. But we had 16 people, so if we had a problem, we could just take care of it just like that. But that trip was probably the trip where we were seriously aiming for all the big holes. Everything, pretty much everything but the ledge hole and the far left side of Crystal was up, was game. Like anything else, go for it.
Joe ran the ledge hole, that one, kayak.
Oh, yeah, our buddy, our kayaker, he ran the ledge hole at night by himself. Nobody knew that he was going to do it. He didn't say anything. Yeah. All of a sudden, he put on his gear, jumped in his kayak, and I was like, "Joe, what are you doing?" He's like, "I'm going to run lava right now." So we all ran up to the patio area, the viewing area, because we were camped out at above lava. So we all ran up there, and Joe went in, and he was doing the right run, but he didn't go far enough right. He needed to be over like another 20 feet. So he dropped right into the ledge hole, had one huge forward brace, and made it through the bottom of the rapid, and went and surfed Hawaii 5-0. And then slid on out and everything, and brought his kayak back up so he could do it the next day. But he didn't tell anybody. The sun had already gone down like an hour before. But I guess he just had the desire. He had the desire right then, So I got to go do this right now.
He surfed that.
And there was nobody else in the water. So I mean, if he had a problem, he had no support because we didn't even know he was doing it, and all of a sudden we're running up there to see what happens and all that. So that was interesting. We came across a group one time that had an upside down boat, and they'd been sitting there in the rocks, camped out in the rocks for 3 or 4 days trying to get their boat back over. I think that was down below Crystal. So we came up on them one time and got up there right away. I think that was 2011. Got up there and they had their Z-drag set up and everything. And we got there, me and my buddy that was on the raft with me, we went on up. I'm like, "We can get that raft over for you." And they're like, "Oh, how you gonna do that?" And I was like, "Well, first of all, take all that stuff off." I'm like, "Oh, we've been setting up the Z-drag system for a day and a half." They didn't want to take it apart. And I was like, "Well, you guys aren't getting anywhere." I was like, "We'll help you out. We'll have your raft flipped upright in 5 minutes if you do what we say." Kind of thing. And they didn't want to take it all apart and everything. So I was like, "Okay, we'll leave you alone. You guys keep on doing what you're doing," kind of thing. And then the one guy come on over and he's like, "You really can get a raft over?" And I was like, "Yeah, of course we can. Take all that stuff off and the rest of our group shows up and we'll get your raft going." They showed up. 2 minutes later, we had their raft upright and everything. And I'm like, "Whoa, we never even seen that before." And like, so that was interesting, helping those guys out. And they were camped in the rocks. There was no flat areas in between the rocks to sleep or anything like that. They'd been there for a while. So that was... We've helped out a bunch of people flip the rafts over. Just because usually, if we got a bunch of people and everything, we know just what to do and everything. So we see somebody upside down that doesn't necessarily know what they're doing or anything. We jump right on it and put our flip lights on and get them back going again. And then we had one group that they flipped twice. We helped them out, and then they camped out with us at Bass. And they were a bluegrass band from the New England states. There were 6 of them. And so when they camped with us at Bass and everything, we made a fire and everything. And then all of a sudden, they bring out all their instruments, and they start playing music for us. So wow. They played music for like 2 or 3 hours that night and everything, which was awesome. It was excellent, excellent music. You know, it was really good.
Cool. Well, is there anything else?
Well, on this trip, I would say, the trip that we just did, I was going to mention is the one thing that I really wish we would have done different is that we stayed at Olo. Olo was the best camp I've ever seen in the Grand Canyon. And there were no tracks on it. Nobody had even stopped. The whole inside of Olo filled up with 20 or 30 feet of sand. So like, even where the waterfall came down, it was dropping into a clear pool in the sand. It wasn't even dropping on the rocks. It was dropping into a clear pool in the sand.
Yeah.
So there was like 2 huge sand dunes or sandbars in there. Each one of them as big as a football field.
Wow.
Each one of them. And it was in the sun and everything, but we just got off of camp like 2 miles ahead because every other time I camped at Olo, I thought it sucked. As far as the camp goes, it's not a good camp at all. And then like we go 2 miles in the river and we stop at Olo, go up and look at the falls, and we climb up out of the sand and everything. We're looking around like, "Whoa, this is
that's coming.
This is awesome." They're just awesome in the sun and everything. So yeah, we should have stayed at Olo. And even though we just did 2 miles that day, I kind of wish I'd have just said, "Okay, we're staying here."
did you stop at National at all?
National? No, I don't think we. No, we didn't stop at National.
Okay. I just kind of wondered what the state of that beach after it had been flooded out and washed out, the whole camp was washed out. Did that do well with this recent habitat flow? Like Olo did well.
Yeah, very, very well. And there's a lot of places that were, like Redwall. There's that huge sandbar out in front of Redwall. We actually ended up staying there. We didn't stay in Redwall. Of course, you can't and everything, and I don't necessarily know whether we were supposed to stay that close to Redwall or something, but there was nothing that I read that said you can't camp on a sandbar out in the middle of the river. And the sandbar is going to be gone pretty soon anyways. It's going to wash itself out and everything. So we set up camp on the sandbar there, and then there was about 40, 50 feet between the sandbar and the shore. We made a bridge with our rafts all the way across back to the shore so we could walk back up into Redwall Cavern pretty much anytime we wanted.
Cool.
So that was nice, and we listened to the Green Bay Packer game with the Sirius satellite radio on the sandbar. We're Packer fans and everything, so we had a good time on the sandbar and everything. It was a lot of fun there. So because of the recent flood, we had a lot more options that aren't normally there.
Right.
And probably come middle of summer when they have the big water flowing through, those options won't be there again. I mean, we'll have to wait till the next big flood. But there was quite a few places that we camped that there was no camps. It wasn't even a camp in your book or anything. It's just a place that we three people, we can camp pretty much anywhere, I think. So a lot of camps, you have these camps and you got to walk way up, take your kitchen way up there and everything. And we saw a lot of these sandbars that were just up above the river. And we're like, right there, that sandbar looks good. No one got to carry the kitchen table.
Camp, yeah.
15, 20 feet kind of thing.
Perfect.
So we caught a lot of those.
Yeah, perfect.
Which helped us to explore a lot of new places, because you don't usually stop there. And so let's go into lots of unnamed side canyons and stuff that we would never get to go walk on a regular trip or a full trip. So that was really fun. Yeah. And, we named a lot of camps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the best names.
Yeah.
So it begs the question, you did all these trips before with full groups. Mm-hmm. How come three people only this year?
Everybody said it was going to be too cold. That's the main
reason. You just couldn't find the bodies.
I had a bunch of people, but then they just started backing out. And the main reason, well, I think probably half of it was because they figured it was going to be too cold, which it wasn't cold at all. As far as I was concerned, it was like an October trip kind of thing. But then the other half was too, is that we're going to be in the canyon for Thanksgiving and Christmas. So I think that took some people out of it too. The 30 days of missing two holidays and everything, that took some of the people out of it. Would be my, the way I see it. Kind of.
But yeah, we had an almost full trip till, 2 weeks before?
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't even get stuff together with REO necessary to figure out how many people are going and how much food we're going to need and how many boats and all that sort of thing, because it kept on changing right up till 2 weeks to the end.
Right. Wow.
And then finally I was like, okay, it is what it is. Nobody else coming on. Sorry, kind of thing. I'm not changing anymore. So. But I'd never done a three-day trip down the Grand. A three-person trip down the Grand. I've done three-people trips on other rivers and everything, but not down the Grand. So, learn new things. And I'd never thought about the complexities of having only three people. And everybody's got lots of chores to do every day. There's no days off, kind of thing. So that was different in that respect.
What do you think the ideal group size would be?
I do like 16, but I had no problem with three either. So I think if you got 10 people, you can run the Grand however you want, because you got enough people to help with flips and problems and stuff like that. But if you got less, say 8 people or less, then you got to start thinking about what possibly could happen if something goes down. You don't have enough people to make things happen like that. It's going to take a while to make things happen. So I would say 10, if you want to run anything you want, 10 or better is the way to go. If you want to run all the hard lines, the big water lines, all the fun lines and everything, you want people on your trip. But if you got, I had no problem with three people either, doing it a different way, just something different.
And we like to row big boats. There's the small groups that go down and the small, we have 3 men that had small cats. They flip and they could get right back over. Mm-hmm. But we like rafts and we like big rafts. We like to bring a lot of gear and have extra food, especially being a winter trip. So yeah, there's ways of doing it, of course, but the way we like to go, that was what it ended up being.
Mm-hmm.
One last question for you, David, because you've got this experience going back, for quite a while to 2001. Now we're looking at, 13 years or so, 14 years of running in Grand Canyon. If you were king for a day, how would you manage the river differently?
I guess I'd I don't really know that I'd do much different other than maybe having an option to extend your trip in the winter times. I mean, that's probably the only thing I'd do is have set it up to where you have the trips that are set for the length that they're supposed to be and everything, but then you have an option like a maybe even a secondary lottery or something or whatever to where if the Park Service sees that there's not as many river user days as what they were planning on, kind of, if they have some extra ones and everything, they can go ahead and, you know, give people another week on the river or something like that. I would say, and it'd be probably the only thing I'd change. And I mean, I'm sure there's other stuff too, but there's a lot that I don't necessarily know, whether it's this way or that way, so I don't know what there would be to change on it, kind of thing.
I mean, it's interesting because it goes back to something Matt said, which was, I wish I had more time. Yeah. It was his first trip. Yeah. So, yeah.
And we actually had the option to get on the river again yesterday.
Yeah.
That's right, because you launched last year.
Yeah.
Well, no, there was a trip on the 3rd that I was invited on.
Oh, my gosh.
We could have gone and got right back on the river yesterday, which was a possibility, but I got to go make some money. But I would just assume I would have loved to do it.
We were close. We thought about it.
We got, it was 2012. We started up at Gates of Lodore and went all the way through to Grand Canyon, did 54 days on the river. So we did the Powell trip in 2012, and I was hoping to do it again this year, but I got a really good job set up right now. I work as a geologist in oil and gas, and my current situation, I didn't want to take that much time off of work, especially now seeing that price of oil has gone way down. I'm probably going to be out of work for a good portion of this year. So, but I wanted to, this year I was hoping to start up at Green River, Wyoming, was my original plan, but then when this really good project came up, I was like, well, I'm going to have to put that off till another time. You know,
so question about the Lodore trip. So you go through Lodore, and you go through Split Mountain. What are the next sections that you go through?
We have Gates of Lodore, and you got Split Mountain, then you go by Vernal, you go by Jensen, Utah, go by Vernal, and then we went down through, there's a whole long section of flat water before you get to Desil Gray. Went down to, what was it, San Wash at Desil Gray, went by San Wash, did Desolation Canyon, Great Canyon, and then stopped in Green River. We stayed at the River Terrace Motel in Green River. That's an excellent motel to stay at. It was surprising. It was like $75 a night, which is more than we wanted to spend, but the beds were excellent, the food was great, and everything. I mean, I asked for the rooms right in the back of the motel right on the river. So we tied up right up. So, you know, we actually tied up our boats underneath the road deck of the bridge, because nobody could see our boats under the bridge. So we weren't worried about people messing with them, kind of thing, because they didn't know that they were there necessarily. So we tied up under the bridge, stayed at the motel for a couple of days, and resupplied, went in Junction, and then got back in the water, and then was it Labyrinth Canyon, I think, below Green River there, and got into Cataract. And we actually didn't see, from Desolation down through Cataract, we didn't see anybody else in the river. The only time we saw anybody was when we were in Green River, Utah. That was the only time we saw people, and then we didn't see anybody at all between that section. So there was like 3 weeks there that there was nobody on the river, just us, nobody else.
What time of year was this?
This was, we started in August and we finished in October. So, yeah.
And how did you deal with Lake Powell?
We drove around Lake Powell. We had friends came and picked us up, and we packed up and then went around Lake Powell and then rigged back up again at Lee's Ferry.
So what did that journey through the basin tell you about the river?
I don't necessarily know if I have anything necessary to say about what it told me about the river. It was quite low water. There's only 800 CFS coming out from under Flaming Gorge. So we had 800 CFS all the way to the confluence, pretty much. And we got stuck a lot. There's sandbars everywhere, kind of thing. So, and there was days that 30, 40 times a day we'd have to get out and push our rafts off the sandbars. There's that dam near Green River. We hit that dam, and we all got stuck. Everybody except for one got stuck on the top of the dam, and we had to push our rafts off the dam. And then we went into the rock guard below, which was the very worst part of the trip, because we only had 800 CFS to start, and like 600 was going off into the watermelon fields. So we got in that rock guard, and the rock guard was probably 200-300 yards long, and the widest spot in between the rocks was like this. So we're trying to take full-size rafts and everything through the rock guard.
through these 2 to 3 foot width.
Yes, we had to pick up the raft, push them up over the rocks and everything, and everybody had to help with one raft to get one raft through. Then everybody had to help with another raft to get another raft through, and then so that was tough. And then once we passed Green River, went past Green River wastewater treatment plant. The river was a whole different story from then. Because we were swimming in the river every day, kind of thing. It was August and September and everything. We got past it and we saw the treatment plant, and it was just pumping all kinds of nastiness into the water. We didn't even get back in the water for like a week because the river is so nasty from the treatment plant coming out and everything. It was just things floating in the river. It stunk and everything. So from Green River down to pretty much the confluence, we didn't get in the water at all because it was nasty. You didn't want to get in the water, kind of thing. So
when did you do this? 1914?
No, 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years.
I can't believe they can do that.
Yeah. No. And how was Cataract at low water?
Cataract wasn't bad at all. We had everybody that was in the group was experienced river runners. We'd done plenty of rivers together before and all that, so we knew what each person could handle. And Cataract wasn't a problem at all. No problem. Okay. And Big Drop 3. We did see another group that was down there. They ran Big Drop 3 the same day we did, and they had a lady in her group. She got worked in there. She didn't go upside down, but she went in a small cat, and went into a hole, and she got surfed in that hole for probably 2 or 3 minutes, kind of thing. And she finally gets herself out of that hole without flipping, and she goes right into another hole and gets surfed in that hole for a minute or two. And then she got out of that one, went into another hole. Just, it was like one after, but she made it all the way through. Tired, crazy tired, because she was like working hard and everything, but it was interesting seeing that.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people who put the basin together that way.
Yeah.
To see how the drainage works, how the basin works, mm-hmm. through all its different sections.
And it was hot. It was hot. I mean, because we had probably, I bet you we had 3 weeks over 100 degrees every single day. 100, 110 every day for like 3 weeks of it.
And there were no mosquitoes and no biting black flies.
No, we didn't have them. We didn't run into any at all. Because usually they say that near Green River, you run into that stuff and everything. We didn't have any problem with it.
Wow.
It was good.
That's one good thing about the low water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing. That's amazing.
I'm going to have to take off here.
Okay.
But I'm going to get out of the interview. Nice to meet you guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice to meet you.
Great trip.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Tom, for inviting me to sit in.
Good luck.
Nice to meet you.
Definitely.
Well, I'm thinking we're kind of going to wrap things up.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you're thinking about?
Mm-hmm. We had a great time. It was an amazing experience, I think.
It was.
Yeah. You say change anything, I don't think we could change anything because it just kind of became exactly what it was. We went without any expectations.
Yeah.
We didn't have any plan for any camps at all. We just made everything we did on the fly. Like if we got going and started getting dark, we're like, okay, it looks like a good sandbar right there. It's camped there. There was no plan for any of our camps or anything.
Cool.
So it was super fluid like that, and that was really special. That was, you don't get to do that.
Mm-hmm. It was nice having the sandbars from the high release. So it gave us a lot more camps, a lot more choices, quick choices too, you know. So you got a camp there, we knew it.
And also I thought it was kind of nice just having three people in the respect that we were all kind of on the same page. So it wasn't like we had part of the group want to do this, part of the group want to do that, or that sort of thing. It was just we all did. We did pretty much whatever we wanted to do, which worked out with all of us because we pretty much all wanted to do the same thing in general and everything. So it was nice in that respect that there was no hard decision making or trying to talk these people into that or anything like that. It was just we did whatever we wanted for the most part.
That was nice.
Perfect.
Yeah. That's great. Right, cool. We get to come back and do it some more.
Like I said, it was crazy warm. It froze on us at Lee's Ferry and it didn't freeze on us until like the last 2 or 3 days of the trip.
How did you deal with this big storm that just came through?
Is we were at Columbine Falls that day, and we did a layover at Columbine. It snowed on us all day long.
And like
through the night, and then all day, and then a little bit that next night, it snowed on us. It did stick on the ground where we were at, but just like 200 feet above us, it was sticking.
Wow.
So we got a bunch of pictures of snow almost all the way down to the river and everything. It was nice.
Snow over the falls. That was pretty cool.
Nice.
And that's what we were going to take off and go down to Pierce that day, but then we woke up and it was snowing and everything. We're like, this looks too cool. We just kind of want to hang out and do this. And I actually took my computer along, so we got in, me and Matt set up a tent, and it was a big tent he could get into and watch the movie inside the tent and everything, and read books and just kind of went up to the falls and
relaxed a little bit.
Cool. Wait for the storm to clear out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it was nice and sunny the next day, and we got down to Pierce, took a look at Pierce, and we're like, I don't know about that. Because that, that hole, the hole goes all the way across the river now. There, there is no line through there. The hole is all the way across to the left side. And actually right now, I'd say there's enough, the way I saw it, there's enough water that we could have slid through that double drop on the right. And I would say that's actually probably the best run right now. But if you miss that shot right there, you pretty much just push the island, jump off, and let giraffe go. Because you don't want to, I mean, if you miss getting in that slot in the right and everything, just forget about your raft, jump on the island, and wait for your raft to come around and jump in the water and swim out to it or something like that. You know, it was, there's
not worth messing with.
Yeah, there's that. If you miss it, I don't see a way that a raft's getting through there at all. I mean, if you went far, far left, there's a way to get through.
Yeah,
Pierce.
Yeah.
Far, far left, there's a line that I looked at, and I was like, that's 50-50 chance of somebody flipping in there. Okay, I think so. If all three of us go through, chances are we're going to have one or two boats upside down. And we had excellent trips so far and everything. I was like, well, we didn't really want to deal with a huge hassle at the end right now kind of thing. So we backed off on doing Pierce. And, but my vehicle's parked over at South Cove. We hitched a ride over South Cove, get my vehicle, came back. And then it was coming on dark by then. So then we took a drive up to Meadview to go up and get something to eat and that sort of thing, hang out in Meadview for a bit that night and everything. Came back down the next morning. And that next morning was when there was that big cloud inversion. We were stuck in the fog on the river and everything. So then I was like, I want to see what this looks like from above it. So we jumped in the truck and we drove up above it so we could look down the cloud inversion.
Cool.
And that's when the ranger came on by and went on down, and we hadn't cleaned up our camp, and we were actually camped out there. And he's like, well, you guys can't camp there. And I was like, well, this is what we looked at Pierce, and we decided, oh, we don't really want to do that. And he's like, I understand. I'm not going to write you a ticket for camping here and everything. He said, you guys did the right thing, he said. And there's another ranger that came through. An old guy, he'd been there, he'd been 54 years, he was a ranger in different places. I forget what his name is, but he lives in Meadview there. And he came up and talked to us in the morning when the younger ranger came by us. He was telling stories and everything. And he told us that there was three more rapids bigger than Pierce, below Pierce, in Iceberg Canyon. So I don't know for sure just how much truth he has to that. He didn't do it himself, but he said the last person he talked to said there was three more that were bigger than Pierce down there. I knew about the one kind of thing. And then he said one of them was a sheer 20-foot waterfall, which I didn't think was necessarily the case either and all that. But he's like, yeah, you guys don't want to go down there. There's still a dude down there that we haven't found yet. This one guy died down there.
A
couple years ago, something like that.
He didn't have a life jacket. Yeah, that's another story. Yeah.
He took his life jacket off because it was wet. He didn't want to get it. He was drying his life jacket, is what the ranger told us. Took it off to dry it.
As it going to a rapid. Oh. Yeah, but so we were foggy on our information. We had gotten some different, so we ended up being like,
yeah, we didn't know.
That's just not. We'll do it again next time when we have 10 people and we have pros.
Yeah.
If we,
different style.
If we'd had 10 or more people on our trip, we had easily done Pierce. Because if we, whatever problems we have, we got enough people to take care of it kind of thing. And I don't know whether we'd run right or we'd probably run left, because that right side,
and we've run left,
it looks
run left
like the best way of doing it, but if you miss that thing, you got huge problem. I mean, as you got serious consequences if you missed that right drop.
Do you think you could line it on the right? Would that make that right side more attractive?
I bet you could.
Yeah.
I bet you could line it on the right.
Sure you could.
Yeah. But the right side actually looks like a lot of fun, so I wouldn't want to line it.
It looks hittable. It totally looks droppable. Since we were doing all these waterfall drops, we were eyeing it up pretty good, being like, well, but that looks like a fun drop.
There is a lot of current along that right side, though, so I mean, you'd have to have multiple people hanging onto your boat to keep it from going down without you kind of thing. So I think it would almost be easier just to push yourself in there at the oars of the boat, and if for some reason you miss it, jump on the island and watch your boat go around and get chundered.
I'll go left.
Because it drops in there, and then
I'll take my chances on the cross current over there. Yeah. The bubbles out.
Yeah, all that current drops in, then curls back up and around down through itself.
That's what we were getting.
And then there's water bubbling up down below it. It comes like 5-6 feet up in the air. The water pushing up from the bottom of the river keeps moving the river like 5-6 feet up and down. So I mean, even if you went far, you know, next to the left side of that island that appears there, you're gonna get chundered there, and then you probably go down deep, and then you get pushed back up and circ back into the hole again, kind of thing, and you'd have a hard time just getting out of that system there. So we didn't run Pierce. We wanted to, but we didn't do it. It was the thing. If we had 10 or more people, we'd have just done it right away. We went and scouted it and be like, okay, that's what we're doing left run right there. You get a slide right through there, and then hopefully, because the current that's coming from it, there's that line down the left, but then all the current coming from the river underneath that line is slamming into the wall on the left side there. So I figured we had the line all the way through the hole and everything. I figured we could have made it through the hole, but right on the other side of the hole was all this current that was shooting like 20 miles an hour that way. And there's a big lateral coming on the left same thing. So you come through the hole and then you hit this lateral, which is pushing you this way, and then you have all this current pushing like that. So I figured it was 90% of the time. There was like every once in a while it'd break, and there was a line through there like 10% of the time. But 90% of the time, the current was just slamming into that left wall.
So on a good day and a good luck, it goes.
And I've swam lava before. I mean, I've swam Pierce before in 2009, I think it was. Yeah. We were all tied up. We had 7 rafts tied up when we hit Pierce. And I was in the front raft and everything, and it pushed me into that wall and dump trucked me in. And we didn't have my life jacket on, all I had was my shorts and my sandals on, nothing else, and I got swept underneath the raft in the current. But I'm a super strong swimmer. I swam all over the U.S. for 17 years, so I ended up swimming. I got myself off from underneath the rafts, and then the guys in the raft, none of the rafts flipped, but the people that were on the rafts, they were trying to figure something out, and a bunch of people yelling at people and everything, trying to save me. And then I had my friend on the back of the raft. He had the video camera going, HD video camera going, and he's just laughing. And then he you could hear him on the camera. He stopped and he like yelled at everybody, and everybody's like, "Hey, David's fine, settle down." And so I was looking at people. Somebody threw a through line out that went like 15 feet and dropped in the water, kind of thing. And so I looked at them, I looked at the shore, and I was like, okay, you guys figure out what you got going on. I'm swimming over to the sandbar over here. Swam over to the sandbar waiting for somebody with a ducky to come get me and take me back up to the raft. But so that was good. So I learned a lot about Pierce that time. Then the other time, I think I told you I swam from Diamond down the South Cove. I was hoping to swim the entire canyon, but that was part of my 2007 thing. That's when I was set to swim the whole canyon in 2007 when we got tossed in the clink. So jumped in the water at Diamond Creek. I think it was 2006. Jumped in at Diamond Creek and had to sneak past the ranger down there because I knew the ranger wasn't going to let me out without a boat. And so I parked my truck at the motel in Peach Springs. I hitched a ride down with a couple out of New York, and then I had them drop me off like an eighth of a mile from the river, something like that. And I told him, I can't be seen by the ranger kind of thing. So then I snuck through the Tammies along the creek bed there, then went down halfway down the rapid, got behind a big rock, put on all my gear, and jumped in and swam. I jumped in the river that night, that evening, about 6:30 or so. And by 8:30, I had gotten down to Nice, and there was a group that knew people in the group and everything. So then from there, I swam by myself, from Diamond down to Nice, and then I joined that group that was there, and I swam alongside those guys.
So what was swimming Killer Fang Falls like?
Yeah, I hate Killer Fang Falls. I swam into it, and I had all the rapids memorized in my head, but looking at your book and everything, and I had thought that I'd went through Killer Fang Falls, but it was actually 231. So I thought I'd already did it, so I swam into this other one. And when I'm halfway through the rapid, I see the fangs down there, and I was like, oh, this is Killer Fang Falls. So I didn't stop scouting anything. I just jumped in the water and swam all the way down to Nice. But so I was in it, and a current pushed me right into it, and I knocked my shin on a shift fin under the water that I didn't see. I had my dry bag with me, so when I hit the rock fins, I tried to put my dry bag between me and the fins, but then I ended up I thought I broke my leg. And it rolled me, I hit the fins, and it rolled me up over the top of the fins, dropped me onto some fins behind the fins, and then I dropped off of that, and I was stuck in the hole that was behind the fins. And I thought I had a broken leg at the time, all by myself, by my canyon, with a broken leg, and they'll be around kind of thing. And so I'm in the hole kind of thing, so I finally get myself out of the hole, and I get away from it and everything. I reach down, my leg's still one piece, hurts like hell. I mean, it hurt real bad, but my leg was still one piece, and I'm like, okay, I'm fine. I just kept on swimming.
Man. What were you wearing?
I was wearing a 7mm wetsuit, and I had the Farmer John. Well, I had the bibs, and then I had a Farmer John, so I had 14mm over my core. But my arms were just 7mm, and my legs were just 7mm, but I had 14mm over my core.
And how'd that work?
It worked out fine, but it's kind of bulky, I would say. And you almost don't even need a life jacket because there's enough buoyancy in the wetsuit itself and everything. I would, if I was to do something like that again, I'd probably try to get a dry suit, but I want to get a dry suit that's not, I want some dry suit with some stretch to it, because I want it to be tight on my body instead of being all kinds of baggy up, and you know, and you can't, if you got, you got too much drag in a normal dry suit and everything. So I think I saw O'Neill mix kind of a wet suit dry suit combo kind of thing, which I figured I'd try something like that if I would do it again. And I'd probably try to get something custom made just for my size, something that would give me the least amount of drag going through the water.
Wow.
So
that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Right, do you want to jump into these and head down to Diamond at one point?
Well, that's what I was going to do in 2007, but then the problems we had kind of turned me off on it, and now I don't know, because at that time I was absolutely going to swim the Grand Canyon, the whole thing. But now I'm kind of, I don't know if I'm actually going to do it now. Kind of thing. I don't necessarily know that I want to swim the whole Grand Canyon now. Then I really wanted to, now it's not as much of a desire as I had at one time.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
And, well, I got problems with the Park Service at times, too, so I'm sure they wouldn't appreciate that either. But, I don't know, maybe it'll happen someday.
Cool. Well, good luck if you do it. Mm-hmm. It'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll see. Got another trip this year, so I could maybe do it later on in the year. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. Cool. Cool.
But I would... Yeah, I would like to do it in general. I just don't know whether it's going to happen or not now.
Well, you got a bunch of it done. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I've already swam quite a bit of it.
That's right.
And I got no problem swimming the rapids. That doesn't... There's a lot of rapids I'd rather swim than take a kayak or a raft through kind of thing. I just... Because I don't have a problem swimming. Swimming is second nature. Swim like a fish kind of thing. It doesn't bother me one bit.
Yeah. And people that like water... Just like, yeah, let's swim it. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I've swam lava before, so. I actually have friends of mine, they swam lava naked on a Paco pad.
How did that go for them?
It worked out just fine.
Were they able to hang onto the
rubber deck?
Yeah. I just kind of grabbed the pad like this and went down.
Life jackets, right?
Yeah, they had life jackets and helmets on. Hang out their net, they were naked on a Paco pad, swimming lava. They jumped off that rock at the top, the big rock on the right.
Hmm.
They jumped off of that into it, right into the top of lava, and went down right side from there.
Huh. And they managed.
Yeah.
Wow, that'd be fun. Mm-hmm. Next time.
Next time.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, you gotta have new goals. You always have to, there's always new goals.
That's not necessarily a December thing to do.
No.
Well, thank you guys very much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, next time. To be continued. We'll meet again next trip.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Do it again. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I'll be back down in October.
Cool. All right. Thank you again. Here we go. I'm going to turn this off.